You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Jazzed as hell to introduce to our fair audience Dr. Harvey J. K. He is the Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay. Harvey, great to see you again, man. Welcome back.
Good to see you. And I don't know if I mentioned to you, I was down in Milwaukee yesterday.
What?
You didn't come say hi?
I didn't have a chance. Well, it wasn't on the top of my list of things to do because it was my 75th birthday. And my wife and I were out and about doing stuff.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Harvey.
Yeah, thanks.
75, damn, man.
3/4 of a century.
I know you're an FDR Dem, but I didn't know you voted for him. Hey, let's. I certainly want to get there as well. Lots of things to talk about. The last hour, Harvey kind of spent talking about socialism. I referenced a piece I found a while back on the Daily Coast, how 75 ways socialism has improved America. And the reference to point to this was, of course, the Hurricane Milton that barreled through Florida, you know, on the tails of Helene, right? And Governor DeSantis is informing his constituents and the nation, the status on the ground, all the efforts, the machinery, the people, going out and addressing, doing what it can to mitigate this disaster. And every single thing he talks about, every single thing he says, for the most part, with the exception of his wife's charity that kind of brings things together, is a reflection and effort of we the people as socialist dollars paid for by the tax dollars. His salary, the EMTs, the trucks they're using, the roads they're driving on, et cetera, et cetera. Harvey, number one, do you agree with my assessment that seems a whole lot like socialism? And number two, if that's the case, then why do you think that the megas are so anti-socialist?
Okay, well, I generally definitely
agree.
Okay. But I have to say that this is a sidebar, and it'll play out in a minute.
All right.
When Joe Biden and then Kamala Harris fear the possibility that people are going to believe the Democrats are socialists, so they go out in public or in their news conference, they, I'm a capitalist.
Yes.
Right? I'm a capitalist. Well, I always say to myself, why do you bother to say that? Why do you bother to say that? I mean, in their careers, they have been actively public employees. Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. So undeniably, they probably made many an investment along the way. That's their own, that's
sure
for them to do.
Yep.
But they are not capitalists. They do not own major enterprises. They do not, if you like, hire and fire people in a corporate setting. So, I mean, the Democrats don't help this argument either. But to come back to what
well, DeSantis hang on. About, if I may, oh, sorry. Let's talk about that for a second. Then the definition of capitalism we got to agree upon then, right? I mean, if I use the excess cash I get from my labor and invest in a mutual fund, does that make me a capitalist?
No, it does not. Okay, it means you're involved in this capitalist economy as something of an investor, but capitalism implies the ownership and control of the economic system, or as the Marxists would say, the ownership and control of the means of production
and supply.
Okay.
Yeah, yep.
Basically. And so why the Democrats need to say that is always drives me crazy on the one hand.
Yep.
Now, to come back to your point about DeSantis, look, I mean, Florida is a truly horrific place. Every single year we see this kind of thing happen. And the fact is that the vast majority of Floridians are not nearly as bad as the people they put in office. I mean, don't forget, it wasn't too many years ago that when a referendum was held in Florida during election time, mm-hmm. over whether or not to go to a $15 an hour minimum wage, they enacted it. Which, by the way, we here in Wisconsin, with a real progressive and socialist tradition, have yet to come anywhere near accomplishing that. Okay,
yeah,
we'll be clear about that. The other thing is, I mean, DeSantis has a truly reactionary mind. Number one, not long before all this began, he signed into law something about that, or at least signed an executive order in the state. I'm not sure how it worked. That climate change, global warming, would not be a part of public policy in Florida. Yeah. Okay, and then smack back to back, these two hurricanes. And by the way, these are not accidents. We know something has gone on in the environment induced by human activity.
Well, yes, Marjorie Taylor Greene says this is Jewish space lasers. Of course, Harvey. Finally, we're getting to the bottom of it all.
There was somebody on Twitter today who said, "Wait a minute." She couldn't decide if it was the government or the Jews, though in her mind the Jews
usually
are running the government.
Usually it's both.
That's the same, right? Isn't it?
But somebody said if they're controlling the weather, why is it that she hasn't been struck by lightning yet? That was okay.
Well, missing apparently.
These are the same folks that say the deep state is inept and the government can't do anything right. But then somehow, some way, they're controlling the weather and attacking America by controlling the weather. But I don't want to go down the FEMA Marjorie Taylor.
I do
Green
also,
thing.
Also, I want us to make something clear.
Yes.
I mean, for many, many years, I would go annually, and I still have done more recently, to Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah, me too, man.
At the end of January each year for Thomas Paine's birthday, because there's a progressive veterans group in Sarasota and that area of Florida called Veterans for Common Sense, named after the revolutionary pamphlet by Thomas Paine that literally called for independence for the American colonies and the creation of a democratic republic. So I was very much involved with these guys all these years. And I mean, obviously they have no affection for the likes of DeSantis and his ilk.
Yeah.
Well, but it's also the case that DeSantis essentially targeted the Sarasota area. I don't know if you know the story, but there was a really fine public liberal arts college in Sarasota called New College. And New College is basically meant to be the state's sort of elite liberal arts college.
Sure.
So it's a small school. It's right on the shoreline there. I mean, literally, frankly, in the water. And I've spoken there as well. And this is a really fascinating community, Sarasota. So we've gone every year. And what I can't get over is the fact that lots of people have moved down there from up north.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this goes all the way back to when they stole the election for Bush that time. And it is the case that they constantly target this area of Sarasota. So DeSantis targeted this college. He fired the president. He fired the board of regents, the board of trustees, and basically installed this, right-wing crew to run the place. So when I see this devastation that takes place in that area between Tampa and Fort Myers, and it always occurs to me that, at this part of the country, it's so pathetic down there. It is truly pathetic. These are the moments when we are so glad to live in Wisconsin, right? And I shouldn't laugh at the tragedy that's unfolding.
Of course, right.
But it is the case that somehow we've got to learn at the national level that there are parts of this country that really ought not to be settled by millions and millions of people. That includes Arizona and California. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we have so devastated the environment. It's unbelievable.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. That is Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from UW Green Bay, joining me via the stream. I told the audience earlier, Harvey, as a kid, my parents had a condo down there. My grandparents eventually moved down there from Michigan and said we'd go down. Mm. And I took my kids down there. Sometimes we flew, sometimes we drove, and we'd stay on Longboat Key or we'd stay on Siesta Key.
I know Longboat Key. I usually go to Siesta or Lido. Siesta is where my friends are. Lido is where, in fact, I just pulled out my sweatshirt from Lido Beach.
Lido, is that the nude beach? But anyway, I digress, Harvey. Knowing that storm came in right there, man, and growing up there as a kid, I mean, it's the first time I really, had a relationship with where the hurricane hit. You know what I mean? I really feel for the people and some of the news and folks that are, you know, they just rebuilt from Ian or you know, a couple of years ago, and now they're doing it again. And I get you, but that's ultimately their decision, right? If you got the bank to continue to build your homes and you can, you know, pay your insurance rates that are essentially another mortgage. Okay, I guess. Harvey K, let's talk. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was about the reaction of the Teamsters and specifically their president, Sean O'Brien, the union president, just going off on a podcast, swearing and saying essentially the Democratic Party's done nothing for us. And the first thing that comes to my mind is the Bush-Lewis Act, man. What are you talking about? Harvey, what's your take on how this whole Teamster union thing and the lack of endorsement and so forth is evolving?
If we run out of time, let's.
Yeah.
I think I'm on the next segment too.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really astounded when Sean O'Brien went to the Republican National Convention. Now, by the way, 70% of what he said at that convention, I welcomed. Sure. He really did talk about the role of, by the way, the big capitalist corporations and what they've done to this country and the creation of the billionaire class, right? I mean, that made sense. But he wrapped around that rhetoric, I can't talk like that. I won't say those words, but he wrapped around that rhetoric some really, you know, kiss the tushy kind of rhetoric for Biden and Vance and the Republicans. I mean, that floored me, absolutely floored me. And I started to wonder, what's all that about? Okay. Because it's inconceivable for a labor leader to believe that the likes of Donald Trump is a friend of labor unions. It is inconceivable. If the Republican Party has one thing that has been true about it ever since the 1930s, it is the fact, going further, but we're talking about deep into the late 19th century,
right.
They are, except in certain parts of the country, I admit, they have been anti-labor union, okay? And I'll just leave it at this, so when we come back, I can talk more about this. In 1946, when the Taft-Hartley Act was passed, which was meant to really crush labor efforts, it was the Republicans who made that happen.
Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. That is Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to talk some more on these labor issues, and perhaps you can chime in as well, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got a texter saying here, Harvey, I seem to recall Obama saving General Motors. Oh, yeah, the whole auto industry bailout. I kind of remember that. And my recollection is that most of that money was paid back, unlike the billions of dollars that Donald Trump just gave to the farmers to pay them for his trade war with China. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, sticking around, talking a little bit of a union, talking labor, talking Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters. This is the guy that went to the RNC, didn't go or got uninvited to the DNC. I was on a podcast, and here, if I may quote briefly Harvey, what he had to say, quote, I'll be honest with you. I'm a Democrat, but they have effed us over for the last 40 years. And for once, and not all of them, but for once, we're standing up as a union. Probably the only one right now saying, what the F have you done for us? And I'm getting attacked from the left. And we've given, since I've been in office 2.5 years, we've given the Democratic machine 15.7 million. We've given the Republicans about 340,000, truth be told. So it's like, you know, people say the Democratic Party is the party of the working people. They're bought and paid for big tech, those big tech companies. There's more to it. Found that on the Mediaite. But Harvey, once again, the Butch Lewis Act alone, and I'm seeing the value of that deal being done was anywhere from $34 billion to up to, if you believe, the Heritage Foundation, it'll cost up to $600 $1 billion. That seems like a pretty decent return, whatever that number is, for $16 million. Oh,
that's somehow built into that. The Dems bailed out the Teamsters pension fund.
Right.
I mean, how come he doesn't remember that kind of stuff?
Right.
So I asked some of the labor folks, when I say labor folks, labor leaders that I know,
yeah,
what do they make of Sean O'Brien's remarks? And they said, look, Sean's worried, you know, his leadership is relatively new, and he's worried if he crosses too many folks in the union who actually might well be Trumpsters, that maybe the future of his presidency of that union might be in jeopardy.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so one can understand that. But it's also it's one thing to, oh, and by the way, they do make it a point of interviewing candidates. They go through the motions of doing that. In the end, they didn't endorse, and that's critical. But all of his personal remarks, and he's sitting in the presidency of the Teamsters, have been basically pro-Republican and anti-Democratic Party. Okay, and that, let's remember that. Now, undeniably, and I'm going to say this, I've talked about this before, it's for 50 years, neoliberals pretty much ran the Democratic Party, and they were not kind to labor. Look, the demise of the labor movement for so many years, from the late 70s onward, was a consequence, first of all, of the Democrats turning their back on labor, starting with Carter. Okay, and then Clinton, and at times, yes, Obama. Let's be clear about that. Okay, and it seemed as if Biden was about to do it. He did it for briefly and very nastily when, you know, with the railway workers. But that's not the point. The point is that the Democrats maybe have been weak all these years for the very folks who they should worry about,
right,
most,
yes,
working people.
Yes, absolutely.
But they've not declared war on labor in the way that Republicans have ever, I mean, forever, for a century now, and decidedly in the late 21st century. And even now, talk to the folks who in the Republican Party, like Josh Hawley and others, who say that they want to champion the working class. Well, keep in mind, they may want to champion the working class, but they are anti-labor unions. Okay, so I don't know what I don't get it with Sean O'Brien. Now, I do want to tell you, I had something warmed my heart since I spoke to you earlier.
Okay.
That was my wife was out, she came home, and I told her I was going to be on your show and what we were going to talk about. And she said, well, that's really funny because I just drove by the Teamsters Hall. We don't live far from the Teamsters Hall in Green Bay. And they've got, you know, they've got the Harris Walls signs, big signs outside of their hall.
Oh, really?
So let's be clear. A lot of major urban areas Teamsters support Harrison Walls.
Yes.
And I think Sean O'Brien has been blundering on this issue in a really ugly, ugly fashion.
Dr. Harry Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy, UWGB. And I can understand a guy wanting to keep his job, sure. And I can appreciate some valid criticism of the Democratic Party going back many years, as you have articulated, Harvey. But what have the Republicans done? You said, what, the Taft-Hartley Act, right? Which would allow the government to basically stomp all over the unions. I mean, that doesn't seem very pro-union to me.
No, it's clearly the case. Look, the Republicans and the Democrats, whatever my criticisms are of the Democrats, I don't even waste my time quite often talking about it, because the Republicans are truly anti-labor, fundamentally anti-labor. Yes, the Democrats have made kissy face with, you know, Wall Street, and kissy face with the tech companies and all mm-hmm. that. All true. But it's one thing to make kissy face with them, and it's another thing basically to be in bed with big bucks and then go out of your way really to screw workers and labor unions. It's just unacceptable. I don't know how much time we've got left, but there's something I did want to mention before
I go.
You got
2 minutes left, Harvey. 2 minutes. Go ahead.
This will help you segue into John Nichols.
All right. All right.
Okay? John called me about an hour ago, so I know he's coming on. Okay. He had on Twitter today, there was this thing that he highlighted. The thing he highlighted was, this was a line from the New York Times. In remarks about migrants, Donald Trump invokes his long-held fascination with genes and genetics.
Yes, the murder gene.
And John's remark was, shouldn't the fact that a major party presidential candidate who is running in the 21st century that he maintains a long-held fascination with eugenics be much bigger news than the way in which the Times presented it. And I said, so I said to him, I said, absolutely. And I said, this is the sickest election of my 75 years. Okay. I just cannot imagine a sicker election. I mean, there have been ugly moments, but this is a truly sick election that we're having to endure with Donald Trump.
It is amazing, Harvey. And it seems like it's getting worse the closer to the election that we get. I mean, Donald Trump, if he doesn't win, he has a trial, right? I mean, there are things that will happen to Donald Trump that he will have to deal with. And I'm hoping there will be a backlash against all this craziness that's coming out. I mean, eugenics, the murder gene, they're eating the cats and dogs. I mean, it is beyond the pale, the level of lies and misinformation and just the dirty, dark fall that he is having as he continues to deal with the potential loss in this election. It's terrible. And I agree with you there, Harvey. Dr. Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Happy birthday, Harvey. Thanks for coming around. I always appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Jess.
John Nichols coming up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I want to thank Dr. Harvey J.K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Always love it when Harvey comes around. Now, super jazzed to introduce to you John Nichols from The Nation magazine, from the Cap Times. You see him perhaps on the cable TVs occasionally, and always love it when he comes around the show. Thank you, John. Welcome back.
Dom, it's great to be with you. I was literally on the phone with Harvey earlier this afternoon.
No, so man.
I don't want to use the word that describes it, but it's a little internecine.
It is, man, but I love it. And Harvey had mentioned that when we were wrapping up our conversation. So perhaps that's a great place to start. He mentioned the tweet that you put out there, John. Shouldn't the fact that a major presidential party candidate who is running in the 21st century maintains a, quote, long-held fascination, unquote, with eugenics be much bigger news? I believe this is referencing a New York Times article, The Murder Gene, Eugenics. John, I can't believe we're hearing this in this day and age, and I certainly can't believe we're hearing it from Donald Trump, although I should expect it.
Well, I think the only thing that's inaccurate in your statement is that you can't believe you're hearing it from Donald Trump. otherwise, yes, you're exactly right, that this is a little weird. And, you know, I thought we kind of dealt with a lot of this a century ago. When we had, like trials in Tennessee and things like that seemed to wrestle with these issues. But there is no question is that Times article actually quite accurately describes Donald Trump has had a very long fascination with race and genes, you know, some sort of theory that people are different intellectually and morally. This goes back, it's, as the Times article details, for quite a while. What's weird to me is that the Times would treat it so casually, right?
Yeah.
Or that many media outlets would treat it so casually. They'd say, well, yeah, you know, isn't it? Here's a notable thing. Here's something you may not have thought about today.
Right.
You got a candidate for president who kind of has some pretty unsettling ideas, which I think, you know, in any election in the modern age would have been, and I'm saying last century, basically, would have been disqualifying. Yeah. And, you know, certainly as a national candidate, maybe there would have been a couple states where you could have pulled it off. But nationally, it would be disqualifying. And the fact that it isn't, first off, that's unsettling as regards our politics.
Yeah, right.
But the also, again, I get to the core thing I was saying there, and that's the fact that our media doesn't pause at moments like this and say, as Tim Walz has, this is weird.
Yeah.
And not good weird. This is troubling.
Is it, John? Perhaps it's just the fire hose of constant lies and racism and bigotry and anti-Semitism. It just is constant. I mean, if it was reported on as constant as it is in those stark terms, it seems like perhaps the legacy major news medias would just be repeating themselves over and over and over again. And who wants to read the same article?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. This is sort of the challenge, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of theories about this. There's writers and scholars, including scholars of fascism and scholars of authoritarianism and all sorts of other isms that we are a little bit ill at ease with, I hope, who will say that this is what happens, that you know, people are so overwhelmed by all of the racism, all the anti-Semitism, all of the extreme views to such an extent that it becomes normalized. Now, it doesn't become normalized for you or me, or frankly, for most of our listeners, you know, the people that are with us right now listening in, but it does for some portion of society. And that's something that we ought to do exactly what we're doing right now. And that is pause and talk about what's going on, you know, what this reality, and recognize that it's important. It's important not to be overwhelmed by it, but to actually talk about it and to pay attention to that and ask ourselves the fundamental question, is this what we want in our politics or in our governance? I say no. You know, if somebody says yes, well, we could have a debate.
John, do you think perhaps some of the megas aren't digesting it in these terms? Oh, yeah, the murder gene, you know, yeah, it makes sense to me. That's all the further it gets in their minds. Like, don't you have to have a sense of history and knowledge about this particular topic to be, you know, somewhat bothered by it?
Well, but that's why media exists, right? I mean, media it's referred to sometimes as the first draft of history. But in reality, media at its best is where we connect history with the present, right? Mm-hmm. We look at precedents, we look at things that have happened in the past. We say, hey, you ought to be alert to this. You ought to be aware. This doesn't end well when we start to go down this avenue. Yeah. That's what we do with media all the time, by the way. What do you think weather is about? Right?
Right.
When you know, if they're telling you, yeah, there's a big storm coming. Here's some evidence of what these storms have been like in the past. You might want to clear out of here, right?
No, we're going to ride it out, John. It's not going to be as bad. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, there's always going to be
I'm gonna put
those
an extra rope.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Folks are listening.
You understand what I'm saying here.
I do. John Nichols from the Cap Times, from The Nation. Well, I do appreciate your writing, John. And one of the reasons I reached out to you initially was the piece you put in the Cap Times that Harris has a lot in common with Lincoln Republicans. And one of the quotes from your article, what struck me, and you said the first Republicans were true radicals. People who sought to append the politics of the country at a time when existing parties were capitulating to the demands of Southern enslavers and their political pawns. I haven't put it in those terms, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
How is Harris more like have more in common with the Lincoln Republicans than perhaps the Megas might think?
Well, let's be clear. She's more conservative than the initial Republicans. I mean, she's not as radical as they were. On a host of issues, but she's a lot closer to him on a lot of the basic issues. And that's, you know, it isn't just the core issues that we think about in the pre-Civil War era, because of course we think about the debate over the spread of slavery and the fact that the Republican Party had to be founded because the existing parties, the Whigs and the Democrats, refused to address the issue, right? They refused to take the necessary actions to end the spread of slavery and ultimately to overturn it, to get rid of it. And so as a result, there was a need for a new party. But that wasn't the only reason there was a need for a new party. The Republicans who gathered up in Ripon wanted to be welcoming to immigrants. They thought immigrants and newcomers were good. In fact, many of the first Republicans were German-speaking immigrants who had come after the German 1848 revolution. And so immigrants were a really huge part of the formation of the Republican Party. In fact, in Wisconsin, the Republican Party in its initial campaigns often campaigned in English and in German, multilingual campaigning, wow, because there were so many immigrants. They also believed in land reform. They thought that too few wealthy people controlled too much property. And so as a result, they wanted to, you know, redistribute some of the land, especially to poorer folks. So there was a little bit of economic redistribution there. And then the other thing was, and this is nascent, but Lincoln was very big on this. They believed in unions. They really liked unions. And, you know, this notion of people banding together to make sure that in a rapidly industrializing economy, that they'd get a fair shake.
Right.
And so what do you get when you get a political party that wants to address issues of racial unfairness and inequity and you know, terrible treatment of people, that wants to be respectful of immigrants, that wants to redistribute at least some of the wealth, and that really likes unions?
Sounds like a Democratic Party to me, John.
No, brother, that's the Republican.
Well, that me, it used to be the Republican. Right.
Yeah, not
right.
The current ones, man.
Folks,
yeah. And that's why I say that Harris is a little bit more like them. Not as radical as they were, but you know, in the ballpark.
And it's amazing you say that, not as radical as they were, because certainly for the time, they were absolutely radical. And that is a great point, John. Appreciate you making that and writing this article. John Nichols from the Cap Times and The Nation. But also, John, you're a busy guy. The other piece that you put out at The Nation, which caught my eye, this one from yesterday, Donald Trump running scared. He relished the limelight in 2016 and 2020, but now refusing to debate and ducking interviews, and oh yeah, talking about eugenics, but we already covered that. John, why do you think Trump is running scared right now?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of explanations for this, and I'll tell you some of the things that people are saying, and then I'll tell you what I think. There are some folks who are saying, look, he's just a lot older, right?
Yeah.
You know, when he started campaigning and making noises about running for president, he was in his mid-60s. He's now closing in on 80, and that he may just be less energetic or more cautious, whatever. Some people think that. Other people will make arguments that he's in so much trouble, right? That he, you know, 91 indictments, 34 convictions, you know, all sorts of things that they just are uncomfortable.
It's
when they
weighing
come up
on
in
him, perhaps.
Right? Yeah, well, you know, like I said, it can really fill up an interview space. But I actually think it's something different altogether. I think he was very comfortable going into a campaign against Joe Biden, who is roughly the same age as him, who I think it's fair to say has been slowing down. And, you know, while I think Biden continues to be a very effective president, as a candidate, he wasn't doing so well.
Yeah.
And I think Trump thought that was great, right? That was going to be a great situation. Now, suddenly, he is facing a young, much younger, dynamic former prosecutor. And so he wades into the debate confidently with her, and she shreds him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she totally.
Well, he won't admit that, but yes, I concur.
Of course. So now he's like, oh, I'm not going to do any more debates. You know, okay, so debates are off. That's a big change, by the way, because October, one of the things that defined the month of October historically in our presidential campaigns is debates, the second and the third debate between the candidates. In this case, it would be a fourth because of the Biden one. But yeah, debates are a big part of it. And he's canceled that out. The other thing that defines it is some very high-profile interviews, like the 60 Minutes interview. They've been doing that for 50 years, right? In the fall, as you got the candidates defined, each candidate participates in what is considered to be, you know, a real interview, a tough one.
Yeah.
Not one with your friendly folks, you know, but one where, you know, you're going to chase some questions that you don't like. And Harris, you know, you agree with her answers, disagree with them, like them, dislike them. But she sat down for the whole thing, right? She did the whole interview, and it was a tough interview. There's no question. And then she, you know, did an event with him and, you know, continued to talk. And then Wall sat down, and he took some tough questions, right? There's no question of that. But Trump and Vance didn't show, right? And so what you're getting in is a situation where they're warping the fall schedule because they don't want to show up for the things that candidates traditionally do, debates, high-profile interviews, things of that nature. And you ask yourself, well, what is Trump doing with his time, right? Yeah. Well, he had some town hall meeting with Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard on Making America Healthy, right? And, you know, my recommendation, perhaps a little bit healthier diet, Mr. Trump.
I mean.
But really. But be that as it may, you know, it's fine to do that. Everybody does town halls. The Republicans do town halls. The Democrats do blah, blah, blah. But that's kind of like with his primo thing of the week. And then you end up with, you know, he's having rallies. There's no doubt of that. And he gets people at his rallies. Don't, you know, some people say, oh, everybody's walking out of his rallies. He still draws a crowd.
Sure.
But it is true that after a couple hours, people start to walk out. You know, he was up in Juneau. Can you imagine in Juneau, Wisconsin on a Sunday night? You're like, oh, let's go see Trump. And then, you know, you go there, you wait in line for like 5 hours. I mean. And then you got to listen to, like, I don't know, Scott Walker or Brian Steele or Style or somebody like that. And then Trump comes on and gives you like 2 hours.
Two more hours, man.
That's a lot of rallies.
John, I don't think I could listen to my show for more than 2 hours. That's why this show's only 2 hours. John Nichols from The Nation magazine, from The Cap Times. You see him on the cable news sometimes. John, thank you for what you do, man. Appreciate you making yourself available.
It's a total honor to be with you, brother. Take care.
Thank you, John. Folks, 855-752-4842. Coming back, one last segment. Yeah, welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, last segment of the day. If you have something to say, hit us up right now, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It is a phone line. It is a text line. I got some folks out there. Eric from Madison chiming in. The local Teamsters know how to read the room better than O'Brien. Also, Brian only made that speech because Biden was in the race at the time. He miscalculated. Well, that's an interesting perspective. But Biden, I mean, you know, they did pass the Bush-Lewis Act. They saved the pensions. That he did march with them on a strike, the only, you know, sitting current president to ever do so. And to Harvey Kay's point, and thank you, John Nichols from The Nation magazine. But to our last guest, prior to John, Harvey Kay's point, certainly you can look at the history of labor and the Democratic Party and the efforts that have been made or the lacking efforts that have been made. Fair criticism. But what do you think you're going to get from the other side, man? You're not going to get it. They will fight you all the way, every step of the way, because you cannot be both pro strong union and pro corporation. Those mm-hmm. two entities, they conflict. That's kind of the point, the push and pull. Collective bargaining, it's a thing. And when labor demands more and gets more, well, that means either the corporation makes less profit or the prices have to go up to compensate for an expanded and increasing expense. I mean, that's the only ways that those things happen. Or you can borrow more, but, you know, they're not going to do that. So I think it is a little disingenuous for guys, people like Sean O'Brien to make those claims. Now, again, maybe you got a bitch, you got a proper way, a real issue, got you, understood, heard that. But whatever your complaint is, whatever your grievances may be, they're not going to be solved by putting a guy like Donald Trump back into the White House. They're not going to be solved with Speaker Mike Johnson. They're not your friend. They may talk about the workers. They go, oh, we're the party of the worker and class. Yeah. Well, if you were, then how about supporting the unions? How about, you know, increasing the minimum wage? If you're talking about working folks, how are you addressing the issues that poor and working class people are struggling with and dealing with? Like, everyone's got their struggles. I mean, sure, you millionaires, rich people have their troubles too. I mean, what are rich white people going to catch a break in this country?
Seriously.
I mean. So thank you once again, John Nichols. We do have, you did pull some sound. We were lamenting. Well, since Donald Trump is running away from hard interviews where they might fact check you.
I mean. Can you imagine?
You know, I want and expect, just for the record, Jess, to be fact checked.
I do fact check
you. If I say something out of turn that's wrong, and I'm mispronunciation is not necessary, but fact checking, absolutely, man. I don't want to be wrong. I mean, I want to be right. I appreciate and love talking to folks like Harvey K. Happy birthday, Harvey, 75. The guy's been around a long time, and has lots of perspectives, and lots of perspectives that I did not grow up with. My family was more conservative. I didn't hear about these kinds of things. So when I have these conversations, it really expands my horizons, and I hope it does for you as well. And John Nichols as well, putting the stuff out on the Nation magazine, putting things out on the Cap Times, talking about these issues and articulating. I love the fact to compare how the Republican Party was started when Kamala Harris went to Ripon. And you read the piece in the Cap Times, maybe it would might think, well, you know, this is really Cheney, Liz Cheney, you know, bringing Kamala. But John will point out, well, you know, maybe Kamala's the one that's a little more like the Lincoln Republicans. Those Lincoln Republicans, they went against the grain. And if you listen to what John's saying there, they're down for their labor, they're down for the land, they were down for the immigrants, because most of them were. Most of us are. Unless you're indigenous to this country, you came from somewhere, you're an immigrant or a descendant thereof. But Donald Trump was out doing the hard work, I guess, right? He was doing something. Was that the Laura Ingraham?
Yeah.
All right. Before we run out of time, let's hear the
real hard questions.
The hard questions. No softballs. No leading whatsoever.
No.
How will you restore faith in our justice system? A lot of people will say, just going to do to them what they did to him and get back at them.
A lot of people say that's what should happen.
Right.
Yeah, the crowd's down.
But punitively using government institutions is what got us in this mess in the first place.
Not really.
And our town hall that we did back in February.
Did that.
Correct.
One of the lines that really resonated, I think, with people is when you said, "My revenge is going to be my success."
Yeah, well, I do believe that, but I will say have started a terrible precedent. We've never had this. We do have that in third world countries, banana republics, a lot in South America, where they go after somebody politically that's an opponent. We never had it to any great extent.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. But one of the things that really resonated when you said your success will be your payback. I also want to persecute anybody. And we didn't get in this situation because of an overzealous Department of Justice. We got in the situation because Donald Trump did lots of criming. He took lots of documents that he shouldn't have and then lied about hoarding them. Right? He defrauded the state of New York. Playing games with the values of his property and the price on insurance and how much he was actually worth. He played games. Look in Georgia. Helped me find 11,780 votes, though. Right? Oh, yeah. And then don't forget, he incited an insurrection. So, yeah, I hope DOJ goes after people that do those kinds of things. Because we don't do those things. Folks, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Dr. Harvey K. Thank you, John Nichols. Tomorrow, we'll be back with James Santel.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.